whoa, yeah, we are in the place to be. Hi and welcome to What's Next. I'm Therese, your host, and I was trained to be an architect, I work as an architect, and I started this podcast to talk about what's next in the fields of architecture, design and technology, facing topics such as climate change, artificial intelligence, and where humanity's place is in this fast-moving world. I hope you enjoy this week's episode, so have fun listening.
Hello, nice to meet you. Who are you? Please introduce yourself and the studio.
Hi, my name is Dhaval Mistry. I am the founder and principal at Ixoy Studio. Ixoy is a small, curious practice, architecture practice, and it's based out of Ahmedabad in India. The studio has been in operations for 10 years now, and currently I think we are 6 people as a team, including me, 7. So far, I think the more I can tell you, mostly we've been building around the city, in the city. Most of our projects are in the city. Only a few, we got the opportunity to do something else in other cities in India. And that's about it.
Great. Before we get deeper into this, I would like to start with some warm-up questions about yourself as a person. And the first question would be, what's your favorite drink? Alcoholic, non-alcoholic?
Well, for non-alcoholic, coffee comes on the top for sure. I'm an addict in a way, and a lot of coffee every day. So that's for sure a non-alcoholic option. And for the alcoholic, I have a special condition. I'm allergic to alcohol, like all kinds, all forms of alcohol. So if I consume anything, I have a reaction, which is a little painful. But there's an exception. So if I have, so wine is an exception. I sometimes have some reaction with young wines. But averagely decent aged red wine, I really enjoy whenever I can.
Really expensive ones.
I'm not sure about that.
Not allergic to them.
Well, yeah, I kind of like this part of my life. And I don't know if you're aware, but Ahmedabad, this city and the state where Gujarat is the state in India where I belong. This is a dry state, so we still have prohibition in action. So consumption or any kind of possession of alcohol is a crime here. So I think
didn't know this.
Yeah, so this is Gujarat, this state. This is where Gandhi was born, and I think it has something to do with his birth here. He never proposed anything like this, but after his death, I think government decided to pay some kind of respect to the man, and I think everybody in the state still goes through prohibition. So yeah, so my condition is a perfect match for the city I live in, though.
Yeah. No, interesting. If you could develop a skill overnight, what would you wish for? It can be anything.
Okay, so there's this one thing which has always interested me. I don't know how to do it, and I think my answer would be that. So I've always been interested in kind of tapping into collective conscious, which is a difficult thing to explain, but I'm sure you all understand what collective conscious is. So in a way, I feel of a city, basically. So in a way, I feel every city has a tune to itself, which is kind of formed by the beliefs and the ideas of its citizens. And of course, it's going to be varied and enormous amount of data of information in our heads. But still, when we put all of it together, there has to be a particular tune to that city. It would be really great if I could have that skill to kind of decode that information and kind of put it simply or read it or listen to this tune. it would be amazing to have attuned to all the cities in the world.
That's true. And I never had this answer before. Really interesting. Yeah. What's your favorite hobby besides architecture?
I really enjoy movies a lot. So that's been a constant. Otherwise, I have a pretty boring kind of a schedule. But movies is something which I always end up watching. And apart from that, hopping cafes, sitting, sipping coffee, and wondering about everything is my favorite pastime. Yeah.
And watching people while you drink coffee?
Yes, yes. Everything
is... Like watching people is a really big hobby of myself.
Exactly. And basically what I mean is wandering in a cafe is basically an open idea, right? Like you could be watching vehicles. You could be watching the sun. You could be watching a tree move. You could be watching the same person who prepares your coffee, but today he looks different. I don't know. Just a small context, and it offers enough to process and wonder and get to meet someone new, to all kinds of people. So yeah, I really enjoy doing that. So I don't travel that much. My story's been like pretty much I was born in the same city. I studied architecture at CEPT, which is in the same city, and then started a practice pretty early on. Ended up having projects in the same city. And so I don't know, I haven't traveled much, and I think I sit at the spot, basically travel without moving kind of thing. So I sit at spot and I can travel in my head.
But that's really nice to say, I travel in my head.
I do.
Yeah, really nice. If you start your designs or your projects or your competition, is there something or someone who inspires you?
So I think there are many things. I get inspired pretty easily. Like a lot of things can excite me and inspire me. And this is what I think about myself, that it's very easy for me to get inspired. So I would again put in everything which I end up doing, because I do very little. I think I'm lazy. And so if I'm watching a movie, I've selected the movie, and a movie, it could be a movie, it could be a piece of music, it could be a building, it could be a place I visited, it could be a person. I think inspiration is, it really, I would connect it to, at that particular time in my headspace, whatever I'm kind of thinking of, I would be searching for that inspiration. So everything which I end up interacting with or choosing to interact with, I am actually looking for something. And somehow I connect those dots and force that information or inspiration. And like I said, I get excited and inspired pretty easily. So nothing in particular, but yeah.
Okay, but do you sit then on your desk with a white sheet of paper, or do you have to walk around, maybe go to nature or watch your favorite movie or whatever? Or can you just start, you have the competition, you read everything about it or the project that you're going to do, and then you just start drawing?
Oh.
Or do you have to prepare yourself in order to start?
Oh, there is a lot of preparation though. It's extremely difficult to start a project in I think for myself and for the studio, because so for example, I think I can explain that the best by recent things. So when we get a project, so for example, our first project was a stitching unit. It was a pretty large stitching unit, and I had no clue how these things work or what kind of infrastructure is required. So I think the first thing is when we come across a project, we get a problem, which is new. Mostly we are a young practice. And first thing I want to do is figure out and go to as many stitching units which I can access in my city or around the city, which I think have been done well. Go there, talk to the people. So it's an industry. So stitching unit is a high density industry where a lot of people sit in a line and stitch for the entire day. So then I end up talking to these people and ask them that how do they feel, what do they feel about the current space they are working in, do you sweat a lot, Is it comfortable? What would it be better? I don't know. Like, when did he start working? So a lot of conversations, random conversations, like I don't expect to get precise information out of it. But those kind of things allow me to kind of start understanding the problem at hand or what one is getting to design. Then I think some more research, we definitely look at all the existing solutions which have been already done. So for example, when we are doing a stitching unit, I would like to research other stitching units around the world, which we can find case studies. We will try to understand how they've addressed the problem. Spending time on site. And then, of course, we start very rationally. Because here, so again, taking, we are very interested in doing industries as a studio right now. And we've been kind of, and so far we've done 5 of them. Each industry manufactures something else. So the entire process of understanding how that manufacturing happens becomes a story and new learning. So answer to your question is we start rationally. So understanding these little technicalities of the problem, understanding the site, the basic movement of the sun, light, ventilation, orientation, the bylaws. So very rational process to begin with, because those are the things which we might not be able to control later. And once we have some level of solution there, I think that's when the wondering starts. So that, okay, these parameters are kind of fixed. We can't really control them and they are rational. So we can kind of pinpoint that, okay, this is the best direction to kind of go forward with. And then we try to kind of put it together. Then maybe the movies, the music, the people, some random ideas come together. And we try to bring in some emotion or some narrative to the project where the rationality is already taken care of. And then the ideas of expression or something else comes in play. That's where I think we leave ourselves free. That is the only scope. Otherwise, doing an industry is mostly cost-driven and other things. So first, I think we take care of those things.
But I think it's a good way to start, looking for the interaction with people and having a talk about what is maybe wrong now and how can we do it better then. I think that's a good way to start.
Yeah, because I truly believe that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. I truly believe that the designers ahead of us have already tried to address a solution. So if we can quickly learn from their learnings and at least and their mistakes as well, and and that would be a better way to start, I think. So that's why some basic research, conversations, experiences with people who've engaged in the same problem will always help us. I think half the race would be won there. So.
And what importance has nature in your projects? Like, what's your approach in terms of climate change?
Oh, that's a big question. But yeah, I do have a take on that. So not very clear, but I believe that talking from architecture point of view, I believe that the master narrative when it comes to built environment has always been about making this love-hate relationship work between man and nature, right? In the first place, we started building because we had to kind of protect ourselves from nature. Basic things like sun, rain, wind, animals. So that is the premise where we started constructing in the first place. So it was anyways that narrative has been going on. And today, I think because of the way we've kind of grown as a society in this capitalist world, and we've been... We're too many of us, and we are building too much and too many cities, I think. So the nature for us as a practice, I think, as I said, that it comes in the rationality part of dealing with the design solution, where, of course, nature, when we say nature, I'm going to look at the sun, how it moves around my site, how it's going to affect my building. I'm going to look at the winds which exist on the site. I'm going to look at the trees which exist on site. I'm going to look at the soil which exists on site, the kind of the soil, the contours, if at all there are any. So for that is nature to us, and we would like to kind of work with it in both ways. As I said, sometimes we have to protect ourselves from it, the nature, and sometimes we have to respect the nature and try to have a healthy dialogue within that. Then when I see, like when there are tougher choices, right? Like we live in a very, we practice in a very, like India is a very booming kind of a country right now. We are kind of all, everyone, the psychological space is pretty capitalist. Everything, every decision is based primarily, the economic forces govern the projects pretty much. And especially like the kind of work we've been doing. When we do industries or when we do houses, we face this, everything, the decision is based on economic forces. So there has to be some kind of a balance which has to be established. But yeah, I think, again, to answer your question simply, for us as a practice, nature exists on our site and in the immediate context of our site. And if we can do well in the premise where we are constructing, I think we're doing our job.
And the use of materials, do you also think about it twice before using a material because of all the carbon fiber and plastic that we used for years now, for years, that slowly destroys our planet? And do you have an idea how we can design ourselves out of this use of plastics? And also in this consuming society, like we buy and we buy and we throw away and we throw away instead of repairing something. How can we design ourselves out of this weird circle of producing trash?
Again, I'm a pretty I have a pretty optimistic view about this because I think as humans, we first do, and in time we learn. So innovation and technology first, you know, like every scientist or innovator comes across a new material, finds the function of that material, and then attaches commerce to it, and it suddenly spreads in the society. Because at that point in time, that would be the most viable thing to do. So for example, polythene or plastic made impact on a lot of industries, generated a lot of jobs, helped a lot of people earn a lot of money at that point in time. But today, as most of us, and especially the young ones, are very concerned about this. So already as a society, we've learned that, okay, we as human beings developed something, but it is harming us. It's like, I always give this example of cocaine. You know, like when cocaine was discovered and somebody made cocaine and they all started consuming cocaine. So even like there were some babies were given cocaine. But in time, they learned the adverse effects of that and then they banned it. Mm-hmm. So I think every time as humans, we are explorers. When we innovate at that exact point in time, we might not be able to derive the negative impacts it might have in the future. So I'm pretty optimistic, and those materials, and today we are living in an age where information travels extremely fast. We have different voices. So there are people who will be for commerce, and there will be people who will be for environment and sustainability. So there is a constant dialogue which is kind of happening. I see a huge amount of concern, as I said, like in the new generation. So if, like, I teach at SEPT, and the subject is called engineering sustainability. And where we give this example of fast fashion, basically we like to look at other industries apart from architecture because they are all kind of going through the same thing. So when you look at fast fashion, even brands like H&M and other fast fashion brands have started kind of addressing this issue, and, you know, because the consumers are demanding now that what are you doing about this? And they would try to promote it in some ways or other. So I think when the consumers are aware, the industry will change on its own. So it's eventually we are consultants, and we will have to respect at a certain degree what your client or the audience wants. Of course, you might have your own say, which you can promote in the dialogues you can have with the client. But like I said, that overall architecture is a pretty complex thing. It comes across all kinds of parameters and these enormous amount of aspects which one has to take care of. So it's going to be a negotiation in every project. So what we do is basically we try to find a balance when we choose a material. And that's what I believe that truly sustainable is. Way to go ahead is finding a balance between the economic, social, and environmental forces. Because until they are all taken care of, nothing will move ahead. If I'm just a fanatic environmental person, I might not end up making any impact because my solutions will not be accepted largely for the masses. And until I come out with a solution which can take care of the economic forces and also can take care of the social forces, then the impact will be larger because automatically I believe the society will embrace it with open arms because it just makes sense.
That's a really positive view on things.
Yeah.
And it calmed me down listening to you talk. How will we find a solution?
No, we will, because it is, I truly believe this, because eventually, I don't know, like, I'm a true believer in technology and the age we're living in. I'm very happy to be alive right now, because it's truly democratic. Everybody can have a voice. Together, we as a society will have to negotiate between different voices. And if we lose, I just hope that we don't end up not listening to the other voice. Because the solution will be a negotiation between these different voices. Because because that's why this extreme views might not work. None of like the extreme capitalist views might not work. The extreme environmental views might not work. The extremes of anything might not work. A good negotiated solution is, and it's about people. It's not about us, actually. I don't think it's about the professionals or the thinkers. It's about if the solution is good, the society always accepts it. And you see a wave, right? Like exactly like plastic. Plastic was a viable solution back then because it was cheap. It made my life easy. I didn't have to wash my bags. It generated a new industry. It did all of it. And similarly, like then paper bags came and then something else will come and then something else will come. I think society has a disposal, discarding kind of a system. If something is not good for society's health or Earth's health, it eventually discards it. So things just become obsolete.
Extreme never works. This is a really good sentence.
Yeah, doesn't work.
If we have a look into the future now, how do you see the future of work? How do we work in terms of artificial intelligence? Do you think that all the employees are still needed? Or is there just one creative head sitting and then you have artificial intelligence drawing for you and everything? How do you imagine the future of work?
This question is specific to architecture or it could be work in general?
It also for the architecture field, but in general.
Okay. So I've thought about this and as I said that I'm pretty excited about technology and the new things coming in. So I think I've thought about this and I really feel there are two aspects. Let's start with design. I think if I break down design to its primitive nature, I think there are two aspects to design. One is rational and the other is emotional. So far what I see and what I can see coming really quickly into our lives is AI and the machine learning or the computers, however we put it, is going to develop these tools which will help us take care of the rational aspects of design. So we already have tools, right? Like we use at the studio, like these tools which will tell us the best orientation a building can have for its thermal performance or the best way I can kind of draw in light if I want to harvest natural light. So there are these tools which are helping us already take the best rational decisions. Also, there are some tools which can give me solutions for, again, something rational like structure. There are some tools which are kind of taking care of the finances of the building, that it will give me the best solution to make something very cost effective. So, and there are other rational aspects to design. So I think AI will definitely take care of and make our lives easier to kind of take the rational part of design. First solve it, because I think that's simpler to solve. But I really would love to see that day when it kind of reacts emotionally. So that part of design, how does that come into play? And how would it kind of... I don't know. It's a wonderful thing to kind of wait and watch what happens, because I don't know. I was just reading this thing, I think a week back, Google fired some employee of his from the artificial intelligence department because they were working on some bot. And this guy basically just tweeted about it, that the bot has emotions. You know, the bot reacted emotionally.
Yeah.
So and Google just fired that person as the last update what I got on that news. And these things are happening. And I think the movies were made, like the directors and these people who make movies and write stories, they've imagined this day long back. But I truly don't see it clearly. But mm-hmm. Yeah, as a human being, I would like to retain that job of dealing with things emotionally. I would not want that job to go away. So until this AI takes care of and gives me the best solutions rationally, I would accept it with open arms, and I would be the first person to use those tools. But I would like to employ my own emotions on my work, and I would like to retain the emotions we have as humans, and see how AI kind of reacts on it.
And if AI also gets programmed the power of being emotional, what happens to you then? Or what happens to all the people? What are we doing then? Do we just have our hobbies and our free time, and everybody gets a certain amount of income every month, and we just live our lives and AI just does all the work? Or how do you imagine?
Okay, so in that context also I have a theory. So in that theory, I really feel that that every organism on the planet had a purpose, and the purpose was being a part of evolution in simplistic form. So I think humans were also here to kind of as a part of evolutionary chain. And maybe the day when truly AI is ready and it can also kind of do these things, I think our purpose will be achieved, and maybe we might have to go. Because they will definitely be better than us.
Yeah.
So.
And how do we live?
How do we live? That's the point. I think we might not have to live. I think we might perish. Like dinosaurs. Because it's like the next generation 2.0 is already here. And our purpose, like, I don't know, like, Have you seen Matrix, the movie? Of course. Yeah. So in that, the agent, remember that line the agent tells this guy, that earlier program, they had programmed humans to be happy all the time, but they were not performing when they were happy. You know, they were not doing anything. And then they brought this emotional tangent to the humans. They wrote a code where they would suffer. So, and then they started performing. And however, we are complex beings. We are driven by emotions. Sometimes we are not very efficient because of our emotions and the other aspects of our life. And we might all experience that. But a computer doesn't, or a program doesn't feel that. So if at all that kind of a code can be written, if somebody cracks it, and in 100 years, if there is an entity which is going to be better than us, then we might not be required.
But I think actually for our planet, it would be the best if we would all vanish really, really soon.
Exactly. Again, in the Matrix, this guy actually said this. He said that humans are the closest organism to a virus because the pattern we have. And actually, sometimes when I'm browsing through Google Earth, if you look at the cities, if planet Earth, if you just look at the globe, every city looks like a disease on, like in a painting, right? Like that something happens on your skin and there's a mark, right? You can see that mark of a burn or something else. And if you look at this Google Earth, or try and imagine the Earth, every civilization, every city looks like a disease on the planet. So wherever we go, so he says virus does the same thing, that we go to a place, we use up, end up using all the resources, and then we migrate. So that's exactly what a virus does.
So
I don't know. So basically, like I said, that we have a purpose, and maybe our purpose was to bring birth to the next better version of ourselves. I don't know if I can call it ourselves, but the next version, which is going to take care of the planet's journey from here on. So in 100 years, I really feel that we might be too primitive to be allowed to be on Earth.
Yeah, because the only thing we actually did is destroying it.
Not really. Come on. Not really. Don't look at it like that. Of course, while destroying it, we did a lot of beautiful things as well. I think, again, mixed bag. It's both ways. We've been greedy. We've been too scared because of fear, because of greed, because of other emotions. We've done some stupid things for sure. But we're not that smart, right? Like I said, that we'll only learn once we do the mistake. It still happens. Like a baby only learns when it falls, right? With humans, like our parents keep telling us, don't do this, don't do that. We don't listen to them. And once we do it, we remember that, okay, somebody told me not to do it, but I'll only truly learn once I do that mistake. That's one of the integral parts of being a human being, that earlier information.
But actually, it's a really, really relieving thought that it's just part of our circle that we do here.
It is.
So that we vanish because we created something different that takes care.
Yeah, so that's my theory.
It's a really good theory. No, it's really good.
Glad.
And we already reached the last question, unfortunately.
Sure.
What means architecture for you personally?
Oh. Again, it's a pretty big question, and I've kind of thought about it sometimes. So I'll answer your question in two ways. Like on a daily basis, I don't think about this, right? Like none of us think about this, that what architecture is. So while practicing, it is pretty playful. So it's like something you do. It's like you play. So like I said, I wonder a lot. I'm interested in a lot of things. I look around, and it kind of does something to me as a human being. That information is processed in my head in a certain way. And at that particular time, when I might be dealing with one particular project or two particular projects which I'm dealing in, and I'd like to try and incorporate those ideas or into that project. So when I look at a bigger picture, I feel that architecture is one of the best mediums which allows one to kind of look at everything around us, record it in a certain way, because our perceptions are going to be different in the same context individually. So perceive it in a certain way, record it in a certain way, and then apply it in a certain way. So and basically every project has this potential. Like if we go back to what we were talking earlier, that I'm here right now, and I'm doing a project, and I'm living in a certain time, in a certain place, and I would like to kind of record that information and put it into a piece, which is for now a building, a factory, or a cafe, or a house. So it might tell a story, if it lasts some years, about the times which it was built in, the parameters or the concerns people had at that time, and the parameters. So it's just like it's like any other faculty of arts or faculty where we try to express, but it's much more complex. But I like this aspect of architecture a lot, where I said that rationality, of course, we can take care of, but this is where I think it gets interesting. This is why I think I'm interested in architecture.
really nice last sentence and description. Thank you very much that you were my guest. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Same here.
And
same
actually,
here.
I would like to have part two because of the vanishing of human race. This would be really nice if we could talk about this a little bit more.
So there is this. I don't know if you're running out of time, we'll keep it for later. But yeah, let's do the part two. I'm in. Let me know whenever.
This was this week's episode. We really hope you liked it as much as we did. If you have comments, suggestions, critique, please let us know. And till next time on What's Next. Ciao, ciao.